2643, and then 61. So let me first open up a work session on House Bill 2150. Dave, give us a brief summary of a fairly complicated issue.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. House Bill 2150B fixes a couple of important unintended consequences from 2011 legislation. What it does is it avoids double weights of student weights when a school district has a charter school and non-charter schools together and students move around between them. So for example, if a charter school kids move to non-charter schools, then under current law, the charter schools get the weight of these moving students, and non-charter schools also get the weights of these students. So double weighting. So 2150, House Bill 2150 fixes that situation. And more importantly, by doing so, it avoids granting about $30 to $35 million to a school district that is losing a big online charter school. So under current law, about 4,000 to 4,500 additional weights will be included in the statewide student weights, thus diluting the formula revenue, because the top part, numerator, the pot of money stays the same, but the denominator becomes bigger. So the districts would get less money per ADMW. So this bill fixes that situation too. So together, the fixes in this bill saves close to $35 million per year in formula revenue. So that's the essence of the bill. We discussed B-10 and B-11. We discussed the implications coming from these proposed amendments. And that's where we stand at this point.
Okay, questions about denominators in our school formula.
So, Mr. Chair, only that, you know, I spend an inordinate amount of time looking at various options to figure out, you know, if it was fair or balanced or ways to fair and balance it, and frankly came up with no good solutions. And thank you to the good LRO staff for going through those gyrations to figure out if there was a different way to make it that was fairer or less fair or whatever, and came up with nothing. And thank you to the Department of Education for going through those gyrations. But apparently the best course of action is that Representative Springer came up with in the House that we got. So with that,
yeah.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Mr. Chair, it's 2150, right?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2150 be engrossed to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2150 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on this? Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2150 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist, will you carry this?
Oh, I'm just pleased as punch, Mr. Chair.
Close a work session and open up a work session on House Bill 2643. This is the E-Zone. It was brought to us a week or so ago. Representative Lively and others. You know, I don't believe we have any amendments for this. Give us a brief summary.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So. House Bill 2643B, as you were just saying, the committee did hear this last week or the week before. And what it does is it's eliminating the numeric cap on the number of enterprise zones and allowing the designation of zones to be with the cities, the counties, and ports under certain circumstances. The Oregon Business Development Department will still, there's still a provision that will allow them to determine whether or not the enterprise zone can go forward, and that's based upon the criteria still being met. So the criteria in the enterprise zone, the existing law criteria, is still applicable. So it's still, the zone designation still has to meet the economic conditions in the area to be designated, and then the requirements of the businesses to continue to qualify are still there. It's just removing the numeric limit and then allowing the counties, the cities, and the ports to designate these. The limits related to the enterprise, the electronic commerce enterprise zones and the electronic commerce city are still in place, and that's important because those do have tax credits associated with them, so there's no impact on the income tax side. And then on the property tax side, there's no direct revenue impact, as it this is up to the local governments if they want to designate more zones. Just for a little background, right now there are four zones that will be coming available, and there's been five requests, so that gives some sense. Right now only four of those five would be able to be approved under this new change. All five of those, if they meet the requirements, will be able to establish enterprise zones. And the we do have the fiscal is minimal as well.
Questions of Kyle?
Is there any amendments?
No amendments.
Have we heard this before?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2643 to the floor with a 2-pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2643 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a 2-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2643 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a 2-pass recommendation. Senator Riley, we're over to you.
Yes.
Would you mind carrying this bill? Thank you.
Not a problem.
Okay. I'll close the work session on 2643 and open up the work session on Senate Bill 61. Bring up Dr. Henry Kissinger here to discuss our foreign policy.
Yeah, he's really improved his accent.
I'll have to work on my German accent.
But you're starting to get that hunch, though, too. So you're starting to look like a career Foreign Service officer.
Paul, would you
mind giving us a compliment?
It's not. I just want you to know.
Give us a brief summary of what we're doing here and speak to the latest amendment, the fours, and I'm sure Senator Boquist wants to discuss those as well. I want to hear from everybody on those.
Okay. Mr. Chair, as you recall, at the previous meeting on Senate Bill 61, you had the Dash 3 amendments. So I'll kind of start from that as a base and talk about the changes that are in the Dash 4 amendments, which are now up. First of all, the Dash 4s do change the list of jurisdictions. Under the Dash 3s, Panama, Guatemala, Hong Kong, and Trinidad Tobago were added to the list based on Department of Revenue's report. The Dash 4s do not add those, so they're removed relative to the Dash 3, and they instead include Switzerland, which you can see there on line 21 is added to the list of jurisdictions. It also keeps what we talked about as a third country adjustment, section 2, sub 2 on page 2. The deuces are wild. And you can see that language is still there, which is the case where you have income reported in a jurisdiction, but it is not does not originate from a U.S. source. So that elimination or subtraction is retained in the Dash 4s. The other change is that it removes the criteria that was listed in the Dash 3s. That's not in current law now, so it would not put those in current law into the Dash 4. And then the final thing is that it adds a Section 7, which directs, let's say, Revenue Office to have provide a report to the 2017 legislature on an assessment of the cost effectiveness of the policy. Presumably that would involve looking at the revenue that's come in, comparing that revenue with the projections that were made, and whatever administrative costs the Department of Revenue would incur in carrying out the legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
I'd love to jump. This is another one of those analogies, as I always use on the floor, that, I mean, we're once again trying to figure out how to put the Band-Aid on the sucking chest wound. I want to go back to 2013, though, so we kind of understand how we got here, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Warner, I did submit two items to be placed on OLIS and passed out to the committee members, and I'd appreciate if some staff member were to make sure the paper copies come around right now to the members so that they can, that each member at the diocese has it. Dr. Warner, if you recall, and just want to make sure I understand, we had these extended discussions on tax policy. This was one of those minor issues, not minor, it's now become major, in this whole discussion back in 2013. And the intent of the law and the law that we have right now, am I correct in saying, you know, we've identified these set of countries that some individuals consider to be tax havens, and so if, say, example, corporate or business X was doing business in that country, that we're really going back and checking and making sure that that tax filing is correct. So if company X is already paying its taxes under Oregon law, it wouldn't be impacted, would it?
Senator, the objective behind the policy was, as we looked at Oregon's system prior to 2013, it was a water's edge system. So you had to report all the income that was on your federal return, and we used the federal return to apportion income back to Oregon for tax purposes. The policy decision behind the original 13 legislation was that there is this phenomenon of profit shifting going on, in which profits that are really earned in the U.S. and should be reported at the water's edge level are not. Instead, they're reported in these tax haven jurisdictions. So the decision to include those jurisdictions was based on an experience in Montana, and we basically we use exactly the list of jurisdictions they had. So we incorporated that and then required any member of a filing group, a consolidated return, that was located in one of those to report the income on their Oregon return. So that was reported on it. The adjustment that you've made here that's in all of the amendments now is that, well, maybe some of that income didn't originate from the U.S. and is really not part of the water's edge calculation, so therefore that can be subtracted out. And that's the Section 2 adjustment. So the idea was that there was income that should be reported in the U.S. but is not because of international tax management. There's nothing really illegal going on in terms of profit shifting. It's all perfectly legal. But it is not an accurate reflection of the true activity and the income that's really earned in the U.S. Therefore, this provides a measure to try to compensate for that income that's not reported, and then you use that as an expanded base to apportion back to Oregon.
So again, in short, what we're trying to do is identify those. If company X is already doing what it should be doing, as you said earlier, mm-hmm. then it really wouldn't have much impact. It's if they're using other gyrations to that may or may not or whatever. And so these original list, and I don't see, there's a second handout that I don't see out here. That was.
It's on the other side.
Nope. You'd have four pages. Okay. Originally back in the discussions back in 2013, so it's clear once again, and hopefully everybody, make sure the five members know this, there was this discussion, the Multi-State Tax Commission, which is a group of states, so on and so forth, that decided that they needed to hire Dr. Kissinger or Howard Baker, you know, and making them expertise was one portion of the discussion, but then there was also the original OECD list, which is the basically the international group that has been overseeing, predating the ECEU, European Union, doing tax treaties, so on and so forth. And there were, back then originally, 14 countries identified, specifically from the OECD, that these were the 14 countries that were most likely or considered to be tax havens, and the international body was trying to get them to go through. And then for whatever reason, after the 23 regular session, when we came to the, quote, grand bargain in the special session, some of those names on that list, I'll just say, for whatever purposes beyond this committee or anybody here involved, disappeared off the list, such as Switzerland, which is considered number one on the list. And if you ask any human being out there, what's a tax haven? The first thing that rolls off their list is not Swiss chocolate, but Switzerland. Which brings us back to the deal of the original thing, Mr. Chair. Is this a good policy or a bad policy? And I think that's the fundamental issue. And the problem we have is that there are other people above us in this building who say anything you do has to be, quote, revenue neutral. So if we put something in and take something out, we have to kind of balance this out.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the amendment that, trying to kind of like the previous bill, figure out what we're doing is, okay, wait a minute. If Switzerland is accepted by the international world and you know, everybody, and I just point out that the U.S. Department of Justice has 100 banks under agreement right now and is prosecuting others in Switzerland for tax haven issues, so I don't think there's any debate about that. And it is unfortunate that there are numerous legitimate companies, and I would assume any Swiss company that's doing business in Oregon, my assumption is at this point is probably operating legally, paying its fair share, so on and so forth. So, but if Switzerland's the number one target and it's not doing anything wrong, that begs the difference of why do we have the policy? And the only thing I did in the amendment was say, okay, if Switzerland's number one, then if we can't find anything in a study in the next 2 years that proves Switzerland is actually really doing anything wrong in Oregon, then we ought to repeal the whole bloody law. But at this point, that doesn't seem to be an option.
If we're in the tax haven business, is what you're saying.
Right.
And four of us up here voted for that. Senator Riley wasn't here.
You're lucky.
We voted to go into the,
it's been convenient,
down this road. And what you're saying is if we're going to do it, let's be all in. And that's why we got Switzerland. You also defended leaving Hong Kong off.
That's correct. If you look at what was just handed out to you, which is the original, some of the discussions originally, and I pointed out yesterday, what you have in front of you is the table that comes from the OECD list, which is the preeminent authority in this worldwide, and it's a governmental body that does this stuff. If you look in the largely compliant box, you will see at the very bottom the United States. And if you go backwards, you will see Hong Kong, China. Now, if you drop to the bottom of the list, you have two blocks, which is not compliant: Virgin Islands, Cyprus, Luxembourg, Seychelles. And then you drop to the next one that can't be rated because they won't cooperate. You have a list of other countries that are down there. And you see Switzerland named again. Nowhere on there do you see Netherlands. Now, that's the original discussion of the list from 2013. And as we know, the bill that came out that we voted for, and I mean, I'm not defending it. I voted yes, but it's like vote yes or no for the whole package is sort of how we came out. We had it in three bills, and we picked and choose. My point is only this, is if either Switzerland's in because it's the number one on the list, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong corporate-wise, or the whole thing is out. Because if you can't find something wrong with Switzerland and it's the 800-pound gorilla on block, I don't know how you're going to find something when Dr. Warner and whoever from LRO goes to, I don't know, Nauru, okay, we'll pick one. Or you know, Vanuatu. It's not much left. It had a hurricane this last year. And try and find the money. I mean, that's my point. So I am for repealing the whole bloody thing, but I don't see that that's going to happen this session.
Speaking truth as usual. Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just kind of tapping in on my good colleague's conversation, some of this information about Switzerland is old. I mean, obviously something's going on. There's major investigation going by the feds into Switzerland. There's agreements. There's things coming out of it. There's fines. There's all kinds of things. I think they're going to address the Switzerland issue. Obviously, they're addressing it currently. And does the state of Oregon want to just, you know, do the same thing the feds are doing? I think we ought to wait until the feds get all done with all of this and let the dust settle and then see what comes out of it before we pour any of our resources into it. because I think it's going to take a lot of resources to try to figure it out. So I think we ought to give it some time, let the feds figure this out, and then after the dust settles, see what happened before we make a move.
Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. as you pointed out, I'm the only member of the committee who did not vote for this.
You have the moral high ground.
I don't know what I would have done if I'd been here, so I can't take that moral high ground. But this is what we have in front of us. We don't have a repeal in front of us. As you know, the good senator pointed out, we need to look at policy, and if the policy points us in that direction, that's what we should do. I believe, as Senator Boquist does, that you know our companies from Switzerland who are doing business in Oregon are probably doing the right thing, and if they are, then that's great. And I hope that's the case. So, you know, we should go where the policy leads us.
So bad words.
I can argue either way.
As you know, we've had discussions about my own feeling is that what I am uncomfortable with is the lack of corporate tax, corporate finance, and foreign policy expertise on this committee. No offense, anybody, but I mean, we're
international corporate.
Yeah, international. We are a 5-member committee in the Oregon legislature trying to figure out what the right thing to do is on these things. The technical fixes make sense to me. It's this requirement that it be revenue neutral that is driving me crazy right now. Because if it is, I'm kind of with Senator Boquist, if it's the right thing to do and we want to continue this policy, then we ought to be all in with certain, at certain points on the list. But if we're uncomfortable with it, we shouldn't be adding more to the, we shouldn't be adding anybody to the list. And so, you know, that's kind of where I am. I mean, we're either in or we're not. And it's only been the last 2 days that I've really started really thinking about this seriously and find myself perplexed as to what to do.
Well, there's no requirement to be revenue neutral, revenue positive, revenue negative. We're trying to chase the best policy here for the state of Oregon, and we're in the tax haven business now.
Yeah.
Senator Boquist?
And Mr. Chair, I mean, I don't know if Dr. Kissinger here can tell us what is the total, I mean, we don't know to date. This is the problem, I think, correct, isn't it, Paul? We have this law, we don't know to date what its real impact is. We're, you know, literally somebody shot us and we have the sucking chest room, but we don't even know who's shooting because we have no information from the other side whatsoever, do we? There's no tax filings yet. There's no, it's all etherical or mystical or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Senator, yes, as we've talked about earlier, the 2013 legislation first applied to the 14 corporate tax year. Mm-hmm. And generally, we're looking at 18 months to 2 years lag before you get a full set of corporate data for that year. Corporations get to choose their filing year, so it can start in any month. So it was for 14 corporate filing years, so if you have a July to July, it wouldn't have affected you until July of 14, and so not till July of 15 would you have a full year. And then you've got the lags for reporting your returns and so forth. So, yes, we don't have any hard data. The numbers that we have talked with you about come from two sources. One is we had the Montana data that we used. Montana had detailed information on what their revenue estimates were and where the countries of origin were. So they knew what that was. Now, Montana and Oregon have a lot of differences in terms of their economy, obviously, and so we tried to capture some of that, but that was a, you know, basically a very high-level kind of adjustment. The other source we've had is the Department of Commerce, U.S. Department of Commerce data that we've talked about that is net income reported by U.S. affiliates by country. So we know where the largest amounts are in terms of U.S. corporations overall. Now, how much of that is tied back to Oregon is we don't know. But we use that kind of macro-level data. So, for example, when we look at the Dash 4, we know that Switzerland is a country that has a relatively high level of reported income for U.S. affiliates. And we would score this Dash 4 amendment as increasing revenue by $2.7 million for the 15-17 biennium. It would be capturing 1 year. So we would give this a revenue impact of 2.7 and then about 5.5 for the biennium going forward. That is not, as the chair pointed out, that's not a bill for raising revenue because council has seen this policy as a compliance policy, and therefore it would not trigger a supermajority vote. So the bill as it is now would have a plus 2.7 in revenue.
Follow up, Mr. Chair? So company X and company P and company B, who are already compliant, wouldn't be impacted. The 2.7 comes with the assumption that there's some individuals that aren't compliant. Is that not correct?
Senator, I guess the compliant issue, that's true. It wouldn't be compliant in this expanded sense of what is the true water's edge. So what we're saying is this income really was earned in the U.S., so therefore it should be reported as an adjustment to the water's edge and then an apportion back to Oregon. Again, I would emphasize that there's a compliance issue in terms of not reporting it in the U.S. as it would be on the, if it reflected where economic activity is, but it is not an illegal thing. We're not talking about some type of illegal activity where it could be prosecuted because these are perfectly legal profit-shifting maneuvers that corporations do.
Loopholes, right. Mr. Chair, one last follow-up.
Senator Buckles.
Paul, you mentioned Montana revenue estimate. Does Montana have real data? Actually based on returns?
Yes. Senator, Montana enacted this legislation with the same list of countries that you have under current law in 2003. They have made, in recent sessions, they have made proposals to expand the list, including a number of additional countries that were on their Department of Revenue report. Their legislature, the last couple of sessions, has chosen not to expand the list. They've kept it. They haven't changed it in the last, in spite of recommendations from the Department of Revenue.
And Switzerland, I'm just curious, is Switzerland on their list or not?
Senator, no, Switzerland is not on their list. They are... the list their list matches what we have under current law, with the exception of Panama, which was removed by legislative action here.
Okay, so, Mr. Obviously Montana, whose state capital is, smaller than my largest city, except when the legislative sessions and then all the lobbyists and everybody come to town, then it gets really big. But, their state capital is, pretty small. And for whatever reason, in the halls of their legislature and state capital, they've obviously had the same political problems we have, where people are picking and choosing off the list. And, so I'm not saying Switzerland is getting a free ride, but some are on and some are off, which seems to be, again, the policy problem we have is that if it's the policy, everybody on the list that the international folks say should be on the list, Senator Bertschiger points out, and I would point to you in his point, in additional, that on the OECD list, there are several of them on the bottom 14 that are, in fact, in, for a better word, the fast track to treaty negotiations to getting compliant. I'm probably with several other people at this point. Maybe we ought to repeal the whole bloody thing and, until such point, the governor proposes a secretary of foreign affairs for the state of Oregon.
Paul, question for you. There are some large Swiss companies, Nestle, of course, Novartis, others, that do business in Oregon. What would this do to them?
Well, the key in terms of having a report income on your Oregon return would be to have an affiliate that's located in that, in Switzerland or whatever country's listed. So it may be major companies such as Nestle could be, probably are affected by that, could be. But it could also be that you have, you know, a smaller affiliate that none of us have heard of, and then that becomes part of that filing group. But the factors we've talked about that will affect your Oregon liability is, number one, how much income is reported in the jurisdiction, so to those affiliates. So, it, you know, the way the corporations are structured, that could be, even for a big corporation, it could be a relatively small amount for in an individual jurisdiction. So that's a key factor. And then the other factor we've talked about that you adjust for is what kind of sales did that affiliate have in the jurisdiction, because that dilutes the sales factor and the amount that would be apportioned back to Oregon. And now with your adjustment for income that did not originate in the U.S., then you would have that third adjustment that could affect the amount of an individual filing group. And so emphasize that we're really talking about in these combined returns, we're talking about a filing group rather than a single individual corporation.
All right. And that adjustment you talked to was what we call the HB fix. It does help HB, but some others as well. And that's also in Senator Boquist's amendment here.
Yes, that's the same in that amendment, the same in the dash 3 and the dash 4.
And Mr. Chair, could Paul, I mean, we're trying to do technical fixes and keep this minor and figure out whether it's a good policy, but I believe the House revenue is having much broader discussions, a much larger list, are they not, Mr. Warner?
The House looked at several amendments and covered the gamut. They had an amendment that would have included all the additional recommendations from the Department of Revenue, and that included Switzerland. And it also included the Netherlands, and then the four that were in your dash 3 amendment. So those were the additions, along with the change, the elimination of Monaco, which was taken off the list in the recommendations, and the adjustment for the Netherlands and Tilly. So those changes were all discussed in an amendment in House revenue. That did have a larger revenue impact because there is a lot of income reported both in the Netherlands and in Switzerland. So that impact was roughly $13 million for the biennium, or for the year, 1 year of the biennium. So that estimate was considered. There was also a dash 8 amendment in the House version that basically took the policy back close, in terms of revenue anyway, back close to the original tax haven legislation in 13. In other words, right now we're estimating that the 13 legislation will generate about $20 million a year, or $40 million for a biennium. So we looked at an amendment there that eliminated the list and had some additional instructions for Department of Revenue, which were based essentially on illegal activity, listed transactions as they're called. And that would have taken us, would have basically had a significant impact on the $20 million per year we're estimating now under current law. So that was the gamut that they looked at. And so the dash 3 you saw had some elements of one of the House amendments, but it did not have the Netherlands or Switzerland in it. And so therefore, that's where a lot of the revenue impact was taken out.
So let's just say, if we did nothing other than the technical fixes and had you, you know, put your Dr. Kissinger hat on with whoever were in the Department of Revenue, in 2017, would we have enough data to actually look at this and say, this was a really good idea, or it's my analogy of Band-Aid on a sucking chest wound and we need to get out of foreign policy? Or are we still going to be in the same boat we are right now, having no real technical data of our own?
Well, I think we'd be somewhere in between. I mean, it's true. You would have a year of data, so you would have a year, and that's a lot better than what we got now. So, but a year of data is a year of data. It's not going to give you a real full picture, especially with corporate income tax revenue, which bounces around a lot, especially for individual corporations. But it would give us at least an idea of the revenue stream, where the countries of origin are, how they match up with this kind of general overall world map we're looking at in terms of where income is reported. And it would at least give us a basis where right now everything we're looking at is indirect. So we at least have some direct information about Oregon, about corporate tax returns in Oregon, which would be a big step.
So Dr. Warnigan, as we sit today in the 15-17 revenue forecast, if we do absolutely nothing, what is the dollar value of the present law? So what's the present value of the law in the revenue forecast for 15-17?
For 15-17, I believe, well, I went through and updated that for the latest information we have, and I believe it's $39 million.
And for the biennium, it's built into the
In the present forecast, if we do absolutely nothing.
Yes, the $39 million is current law.
And that includes,
for 15-17, so it's a full 2 years.
And most of these countries aren't any bigger than the state capital of Montana.
They got lots of mailboxes.
Okay. Other comments, Senator Burchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my recommendation on this is to do the technical fixes because we don't have anything in front of us to repeal it, and at the same time is monitor what the federal fixes are for Switzerland and to just keep our. Maybe Switzerland needs to come on the list, but I don't think I'd put it on the list until after the dust settles with that, and move on. See what happens. It doesn't sound like anything's, we know exactly what's going to happen, so we still won't know exactly what's going to happen, Mr. Chair. So that would be my recommendation.
Other comments?
Sure, I would only add that we probably, whatever we need to do is have Dr. Kissinger get together with Dr. Warner and the Department of Revenue and come back in 17 and tell us, a little bit more real data, and especially to the point of, what is the cost-benefit analysis, which is, I think, the fourth part of my amendment is actually the Senator Birchiger's original idea from several committee meetings ago, which is like, are we spending, a buck to get a dime? In the end, and that's much more wider than just direct tax revenue impact. That's, I don't know if you can model this in Odom or something, but there's also the whole issue of investment, job creation, and so on and so forth, and coming up with is this actually helping us or hurting us? So,
okay, I think that's a productive discussion.
Okay,
I really do, and I appreciate Senator Boquist your research. I think what we should do is not move anything today, relax with a cup of Swiss Miss, and
chocolate cigars. I actually have a box that I forgot. I bought you a box of chocolate cigars.
All right.
And not bring that Birchiger's not a Swiss name either.
No,
as chair,
we'll revisit this next week.
As chair, do you have authority to assign?
We have diplomatic immunity, if that's what you're asking.
No. Okay. I was wondering if you had authority to assign to divvy up the countries among the members of the committee and delegate fact-finding missions.
Yes. Trinidad. You want to go to Trinidad? I think Siberia's on here.
So I mean, I got BVI. BVI's mine.
British I'll take Switzerland.
Mine.
All right. So I'll close the work session on Bill 61. Thank you all. That clears our decks. We will adjourn.
Don't walk out, Birchiger. I think.